No matter what you hear in there, no matter how cruelly I beg you, do not open this door. Get me out. Let me out of here. Get me the hell out of here.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Monday, November 16, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. And today we're going to be continuing our series of short episodes dedicated to the top 10 of my top 25 and one. Last Monday through Friday, we did the teams ranked 10th through 6th. So today we move on to the school ranked 5th in the top 25 and one. And that school is Iowa. Iowa had 5 players start at least 20 games last season. Each one of them is back, including Luka Garza, the consensus preseason National Player of the Year. What's to like about Fran McCaffrey's Hawkeyes? What are the concerns? We'll get into it momentarily. But first,
the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Okay, Norlander, today we're talking Iowa. I have the Hawkeyes 5th in the entire United States of America. You have them 3rd in the Big Ten. This is Gene Wilder's alma mater, for crying out loud. Explain
it's
your disrespect.
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You stole fizzy lifting drinks. You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so you get nothing.
We're actually higher than on them than most. I mean, they're 28th at Torvik. They are, where are they at KenPom? They're all the way down at 12 at KenPom. So, listen, relative to what the computers are expecting here, I'm actually pretty good on it. And you frame it as 3rd in the Big Ten. Do I or do I not have Iowa top 10?
I don't know.
I do. Yes. No, I actually do. Now, I do love that we have attached Gene Wilder to this forever, and I'm going to roll with that. But listen, and I know you're the guy that usually says to listen, but I'm going to say listen. Okay?
Listen.
Iowa brings back its starting 5. It's going to be offensively top shelf. Top 3 offense in the country. I think that's a reasonable projection there. Gonzaga probably will be the best offense, and then Iowa might have a good shot at number 2. Defensively, this team was less than reliable a season ago. I mean, the Hawkeyes, who again, we're talking about as a top 5 team in the eyes of GP, top 10 team for me, but this is the best it's ever been heading into a season. It's 4th in the AP poll, by the way, so the AP voters are even higher on them than you are, but 20-11 last season, 97th in defensive efficiency, and lost 3 of its final 4 games. The only win was at home against Penn State. There's enough there that makes me say I just prefer, by narrow margins, Illinois, who we've already talked about, and then Wisconsin, who we've already talked about. So we agree on the top 3 teams in the league. We just disagree on the order. I'm hoping that McCaffrey and his staff are able to turn Iowa into a top 50 defensive unit, which is not going to be an easy task. But if they do that, then there's no doubt about it. Iowa's going to be a top 10 team in America and not, say, 20 or even 23rd, which is what it finished last season at KenPom as the 23rd best team in efficiency margin.
Yeah, they were 23rd at KenPom, but 95th or 97th in defensive efficiency. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, I believe, on the Big Ten podcast. There's only 2 teams in the history of the KenPom database that dates back to 2002 that have finished in the top 10 at KenPom while also finishing outside of the top 95 in defensive efficiency. I won't hit you with the trivia time because we've been through that, but one of them is the Notre Dame team in 2015, finished 99th in defensive efficiency, but still 9th at KenPom. The other is Missouri in 2012, finished 111th in defensive efficiency, but still 7th at KenPom. Neither team made the Final Four. So I guess what I'd say now is the same thing I said then. It is possible to be very good being this bad defensively, but it's rare. The bottom line is that if Iowa wants to be what I think they can be, go to the Final Four for the first time since 1980, they're going to have to be better defensively. They don't have to be top 25, but I do think they're going to have to be much better than 97th. So let me ask you this. Can a team... because it's not like they're, well, they were 97th last season, but man, they're enrolling a five-star point guard who is a, you know, who's Ashton Hagens on the defensive end of the court, and they're enrolling a five-star center who is a Musa Cisse level rim protector. Like, it's the same guys. The same guys that finished 97th are the guys that they're going to be relying on to be better defensively this season. Can that happen? Like, are we just being, because I, if I'm being honest, I can totally envision a scenario where we go, we're looking up in February and nobody's playing any games. I'm just kidding. I could totally envision a scenario where we look up in February and we go, you know what? Iowa was a good team led by a great player last season. And that's exactly what they are this season. They're a good team, just a good team led by a great player this season. I could see that, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a stark at over at with Torvik's numbers. He's got Iowa projected to have the 115th best defense in America. Again, this is just a projection. That's a drop off from where it was a season ago. I don't think that's going to happen there. I don't think that Iowa can convert itself into being even a B plus level defensive team. But I do think if you bring everyone back, you know, winning can really be contagious with a lot of good talent there, then they should be able to upgrade to a certain level. And also, you know, the offense can feed the defense here. I mean, if you're telling me Iowa's going to be even better on offense this season than it was last season, no guarantee of that either, by the way. There are just so many tangible, non-tangible, and intangible factors, I should say, heading into the season that it, as we've talked about and built up to the start of college basketball, which, by the way, oh yeah, is supposed to start next week, okay? 9 days away. Let's frickin' go. It seems like we don't really have a good handle on really how good or not any team is going to be here. From, you know, 14-day sit-outs being mandatory to irregularities in the schedule, how these teams are practicing. Let us be clear on this episode. Though we have Iowa as the fifth best team, this goes for any team that we're going to talk about. The potential for us to be wildly wrong on some of these squads is very real, because there's just so much uncertainty around the sport and how many games we're going to be able to get in there. Historically speaking, defense is more reliable than offense, so maybe that makes Iowa a little bit more vulnerable. But hell, Hawkeye fans, you have been waiting for a season like this for so long, for so long. I mean, you have a historically what's a top 40 program in college basketball, but it's not often where you're a top 10 quality kind of team, and this is that kind of season. It should be that. You have Luka Garza. I mean, it's taken us, what, you know, 7 minutes to even mention his name and talk about what he brings to this this team, which is a good thing, because while he's the expected and near universal preseason pick for player of the year, and that's rightfully what should be the case, he does not have to carry this team. I mean, Joe Wieskamp, Jordan Bohannon coming back, even Connor McCaffrey is a really good player in his own right. There's enough around him where Iowa is going to be one of the must-watch teams, in part because of the offense, but in part because of the expectation there, because the teams that are ahead of them in the AP poll, Baylor, Villanova, Gonzaga, they were really, really good last season, and Iowa was just good last season. They weren't really, really good. They are the team that's crashing the party, that's entering in, that's a Final Four contender, a national championship contender. They're not there every single season, and so the intrigue around this team, I think, is high. Fran McCaffrey has had moments across his Iowa career where he has been rightfully criticized for his brutal temper on the sidelines, slamming chairs, screaming at players' faces. You know, there have been some bad moments, but the program has stuck with him. And now, in what is going to be his 11th season, he has brought this program finally to what should be its apex, and in doing so, has a good chance of being the best team in what will be the best conference, the Big Ten.
It is a little unfortunate that when people think of Iowa basketball, that they do think of Fran losing his mind on the sideline, because he's a really good coach. And yet, you know, it's angry Fran. Like, we've even joked about it on the podcast. I'm wondering, and I'm asking this sincerely, do you think the Greg Marshall situation, now let me be very clear, Fran McCaffrey has never been accused of punching a player or choking an assistant coach. He just like loses his mind sometimes on the sideline. But do you think, given the Greg Marshall situation, that it will have coaches trying their best to be more under control, especially while on national television? And specifically, do you think it'll have an impact on Fran McCaffrey? Because he is one of the coaches most connected to wild sideline behavior.
I mean, maybe, but you know, I would have thought the same thing. After the Mike Rice stuff, I would have thought, right, you know, it's got to end, and it didn't. Now, again, these are not the same people. These are not the same actions. But when it comes to having a temper, which Fran has had on the sideline, there's just no doubt about it. There's no refuting that. And it hasn't been an every game thing. It just, you know, it seems like about once a year there's something of an episode there. But he's got a really good team, so hopefully that's not going to be the case there. I would hope and think that Fran has finally turned a corner, and we'll wait and see on that this season. We're also, GP, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, everyone, in all honesty and sincerity, like, this has been trying mentally for just about every adult in this country for any number of reasons there. I would hope that basketball can be just this huge release valve for coaches and players. And I'm now speaking across the sport. I mean, even for you and me, like, we've been, you know, we've been happy to continue with this podcast regularly in the off season. And we sincerely appreciate everyone that's been continuing to listen. Like, the people that leave the reviews, that have subscribed, like, the numbers have been very good. We're so appreciative, but I am so damn ready for games. Like, I am starving to actually talk about previewing matchups, watching the games, and reacting with you on this podcast. Like, we are just almost there. It's just been the longest offseason in the history of modern college basketball. And so, you know, this is a bit of a tangent, but I think everyone, and this comes from talking to coaches too, where it's like, our guys just want to play, man. They're just so eager and anxious to finally get out and play for their mental health. Because you have guys that have been like, they've had to literally be in their dorm rooms for 14, 20 days at a time because of contact tracing and quarantine stuff. They just want to play the games as much as possible. And if you're a team like Iowa, where you know the hype is there, everyone's back, we can win a national championship, they're champing at the bit.
Yeah, and like, it's such a good fan base. Like, I want them to have this great season. I want it to live up to expectations. Obviously, it's happening under less than ideal circumstances, right in the middle of a dumb pandemic. But, like, I like the Iowa fan base. And you know, seasons on paper like this don't come along that often at Iowa. Again, it's a program that hasn't been to the Final Four since 1980. At Kansas, you're always operating preseason top 10. At Duke, you're almost always preseason top 10. Kentucky, same thing. At Iowa, I don't want to say this is a once in a 20-year thing, but it's not a normal thing. And beyond that, like, one of my best friends married an Iowa girl, so I've got strong Iowa ties now. I was in a wedding last year with just me and a bunch of Iowa girls. So I have strong personal connections to the state of Iowa now. So I actually want this to live up to expectations. Also, I'm a big Luka Garza fan. We always talk about breakthrough seasons. Nobody had a breakthrough season like he had last season. I mean, was he even on our preseason top 100 list a year ago? I don't remember.
No, we brought this up on a recent pod. Yeah. He was not. He literally was, and we published our top 101 last week, and of course we got some pushback on a few players. So just as an example and as an analog here, there are two players I think we got the most blowback on that weren't on the list. It was Trey Mitchell of UMass and David Duke of Providence. And David Duke could be the Luka Garza of this year, in that, like, we could look up, and if Duke cracked the top 50, I think that would be understandable, and I could see that happening. Luka, like Duke, really just, like, he legitimately, like, just missed, because I remember hearing from Iowa fans last year about this and tell him, like, you know, we did a top 101 list. Luka, I think, was, like, 103. So he should have been on the list, but he literally just missed the cut there. And then, lo and behold, Hellman. He goes on to become, you know, a top two player in the sport last season and now returns as the player of the year. And again, that's not a common thing. It's very rare when you have a player that doesn't go to the draft and was one of the best players in college basketball, but because of how Garza plays and an Iowa system, what the NBA wants, college basketball benefits in getting him back.
Yeah, he was the only first-team, second-team, or third-team CBS Sports All-American who returned to college for this season. Last season, averaging 23.9 points, 9.8 rebounds, 1.8 blocks, shot 54% from the field, and actually 36% from three-point range. Low three-point shot totals, but still, you know, when he took them, he made a good percentage. There was some Luka Garza slander in our Slack a few weeks back with some of our editors and other college basketball writers, where some were suggesting that if other players were given the opportunity that he's given, they could average similar numbers. I think I was busy, so I didn't chime in, but do you subscribe to that at all? Like, I don't think Luka Garza is Luka Garza because he's playing at Iowa. I think Luka Garza would be posting numbers like this basically anywhere. Except for Virginia.
He's not posting them at Virginia. I promise you that. And you throw Luka Garza on Duke, I don't know if he's necessarily posting up these kind of numbers. There might be a few programs. But in general, like with who he is, I mean, Iowa might help it a little bit. Fran's an offensive-minded coach, but I don't think that he's incapable. Like if you throw Luka Garza on Gonzaga, I think he's putting up these numbers. If you throw Luka Garza on Creighton, I think he's putting up these numbers. So I don't think it's an Iowa-only thing. Like if you put him on Oregon, I think he's putting up these numbers. So no, I don't think it's an Iowa-only thing. And I'm not here to stand for Luka Garza slander. That's not going to happen on this podcast, not when he's been as good as he's been and has continued to thrive. And again, I think I mentioned this like a couple months ago on a podcast, but there was some video that was put out where he was like working on his hook shot. And if that is, I'm telling you, I'm going to lose it if that is truly, if we are talking a couple games into Iowa season, Luka's dropping these baby hooks and it's and that adds to the arsenal, it's over. It's done. Best player in college hoops. It's very tantalizing. I love the idea of Garza being like, I'm going to get even better, and I'm going to bring in Kareem's go-to move. Because it's if you master that shot, and again, you got to be comfortable with putting it into your game, implementing it, having your coach be good with it, and it's an unusual form. But if you can master it, it literally is unguardable. You cannot stop that shot. It is not blockable when you're as big as Garza is. You have that kind of length, and you're used like that. So if that's going to be part of what he brings into the game, then it is truly a game changer, and all the more reason why he should be considered the front runner for best player in college basketball.
He is by basically everybody, and yet here's the truth. The front runner for player of the year in college basketball almost never wins player of the year in college basketball. Last season, people were just as sure that it should be Cassius Winston as they are now that it should be Luka Garza. And yet Cassius Winston didn't sniff any of the postseason National Player of the Year awards. Now, that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be Luka Garza heading into this season. There is no appropriate alternative to Luka Garza unless you're just going to take a flyer on a freshman, specifically Cade Cunningham. There is no returning player in college basketball that you can make a reasonable argument for above Luka Garza. But so I don't mean that anybody's wrong, including us. Like Luka Garza should be the preseason player of the year, but history suggests that the preseason player of the year in this sport is often not the postseason player of the year for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we do this on an annual basis, and we've only been right once in the past decade. Trivia time!
Okay.
It was the only preseason player that became the player of the year that CBS Sports accurately tabbed at the start of the season in the past decade.
Whew. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis?
We did not pick Anthony Davis. I have the entire list in front of me here. Anthony Davis was not our preseason player of the year that he won it. You know who was the preseason player of the year that year?
Harrison Barnes?
Jared Sullinger.
Hmm.
Jared Sullinger was our preseason player of the year that he won it. The winner happened in the past 3 to 5 seasons. I'll keep it a roving target there.
The player was the national player of the year and the preseason player of the year. Mm-hmm. So, Doug McDermott?
The year Doug McDermott won, our preseason player of the year was just brought up on last week's podcast. We had Andrew Wiggins as the preseason player of the year. Give you one more guess, and then I'll give you the
answer. That's probably my fault. I apologize.
Yeah, well, you know, it's okay. No worries. One more guess. It's happened since 2016, so it was either 16, 17, 18, or 19. It was one of those years.
Well, this is one of those times where I can't even remember who the players of the year were.
Without a doubt, that's what makes this so much fun.
Was it Terry Teagle?
1981? No.
let me try to figure it. I will not be able to figure this out.
All right, here we go. I'm going to give you the list. All right?
Okay.
In 2011, we picked Sullinger. Davis won it. In 2012, we picked Cody Zeller, but Trey Burke won it. In 2013, we picked Wiggins and McDermott won it. In 2014, we picked Jahlil Okafor, but Frank Kaminsky won it. 2015, this one seems like a major miss in retrospect. We picked Kyle Wiltshire, but Denzel Valentine and Buddy Hield actually split those awards. In 2016, we understandably picked Grayson Allen, but Frank Mason won it. 2017 is the year, but I'll get to that in a second. In 2018, we had RJ Barrett. I don't know who that is, but Zion Williamson won it. And then in 2019, we picked Cassius Winston, Obi Toppin won it. And to be fair, Garza did one last season through Sporting News. 2017 was the year. We picked Jalen Brunson, and indeed, that was the correct
pick. How about that?
There we go. So we have Garza. History's not on our side. And to me, Cade Cunningham would be the leading candidate to win it over him. But who even knows? I mean, Obi Toppin was easily in our top 101 last season. He was top 50, I believe. He wound up being the winner there. And by the way, like, Garza deserves all the pub, but he's not, again, he's not the only dude here. Iowa's going to be a great offensive team. Wieskamp is a top 60 player in the country, and I think that Bohannon could have a case. He didn't get onto our list, but I think he's in the conversation for top 100 status there. So keep that in mind. I mean, CJ Frederick is back as well. There's a lot here with Iowa, and they're a very fun team. I can't wait to see what they do. And again, like, Fran McCaffrey wanted to schedule a tough game. Mark Few basically was borderline fearless in scheduling any power conference team in the non-conference. So they are going to try and play each other in early December in South Dakota. That's tremendous, and that could be we have a lot of must-see games in the non-conference, but if that we get to a point where, like, Gonzaga and Iowa are both in the top three from an offensive standpoint, like, that's even better than Baylor versus Villanova or Gonzaga versus Kansas. These are all really, really good games, but Iowa Kansas could be like 99-96 kind of game. So it could be as entertaining as any projected top 10 matchup we have in the non-conference in the first 3 weeks of the season.
And that Gonzaga Iowa game is December 19th. You'll be able to watch it on CBS Sports. That's America's most watched network. It is the network of stars. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening once again. And we will talk to you again on Tuesday when we will profile the team ranked fourth in my top 25 and one as Tony Bennett's Virginia Cavaliers.